Welcome to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne will teach you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your keys to happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.
In this episode of Claim Your Excellent Life, we are speaking about spreading love instead of bullets, untimely death, and suicide. In these last few years, we've heard many stories in the news about fatal shootings at schools, public events, and even in our own military's compounds by their own soldiers. One needs to ask why these things are happening, especially at the alarming rate that it is happening. We know so much about mental health, the development of the human mind, and have the technology and know-how to prevent it. Interestingly enough, we really didn't need much of that knowledge because it hasn't helped our situation at all. As these things, these atrocities, continue to happen. When we look at the Indigenous people with whom I've had the honor and experience of speaking to and hanging out with to some small degree, we realize that they have small communities. They usually live in small farms. Each person has a role that is necessary for the success of their community. And each person's role is totally necessary and therefore respected. Indigenous people are also very spiritual people. They understand that they need to respect the land on which they live, the animals which feed them, and the fruits and vegetables and grains that they grow. They understand out there in the wild that there are many beasts that can both come after their foodstuffs they work so hard to grow, as well as come after them. They work as best they can in the natural world. And because of this, they have a deeper understanding of spirituality, I believe. Because they know that they don't know everything. They know that there's energies and forces out there that are bigger and stronger than they. They understand that they need to respect that as well. And in many cases, if you actually study their religions, their faiths, you will note that they truly do believe in the majesty of the world in which they live. They tend to honor their ancestors. They tend to bury their dead ones on their properties or near them to keep them close by. There's many things that they do in order to honor the natural world in which they live. Keeping them grounded, working the community, caring, sharing, and being with one another in ways that we in the technological world of the 21st century, with all of our technological know-how, have completely and totally lost contact with. Indigenous people use witch doctors and shamans to help them heal body, mind, and spirit, because they understand that we are not just body parts or our emotions, that there's a spiritual base upon which everything is founded, and that we're physical beings living in the spiritual world, so we need to honor that as we go forth in living our lives. They understand that only through understanding the spiritual world can we bring back those things that we need to the physical world in which we live. Unfortunately, with all our technological know-how, people have found so many ways to isolate themselves. With their MP3 players, their DVDs, their computers, their phones, and the texting they do even when you may be right in front of them, giving them your attention. All of a sudden, that text message is more important because they are anchored to that as an automatic response. But the only way of getting them to stop is to have them turn it off and remove it from their personhood many times. It's a very sad commentary on our growth and development as a species, really. Because as well as these technological advances have helped us to figure out quicker ways of processing information, it's also been a very quick way to teach people how to isolate themselves while at the same time thinking they're actually connected socially with the people who they're close to in their lives. And this is a really huge mistake. You know, I use Skype to communicate with my Kenyan family, the family of one of my clients I was lucky enough to meet and work with, who really taught me so many very important things in life just by showing me around their land in Africa. They live in a beautiful, beautiful house, 14 or 15 rooms, I don't know. I couldn't count them all because the maid lived in a part of that house that I didn't have access to. Multi-level, beautiful stained glass, with every convenience except a dryer, because to dry their clothes, all they need to do is drape the clothes over the bushes or hang them out to dry in the sun near the equator where they live. But they had every other thing that we have, including computers, and at the time I was visiting, they had dial-up access. Now they're brought into the 21st century with DSL hookup, which makes Skyping a lot easier, so I can actually see them clearly and hear them much better. With their deep accents, it makes life easier, communicating with these people I love so much. They brought me up to the mountain, to Miro, where they grew up, in what one thinks of as African housing, with small little farms with a couple of cows and goats, chickens, some fruit trees and tea, and whatever else I choose to grow. Their housing is simple. Dirt floors, wood constructs, little place to sleep, generally off the floor, in a hammock-like contraption, or maybe some wood to make sort of a platform bed, along with a place for them to build a fire, to cook their food in these metal kettles with a smoke running through their housing. That's the way some of them live. Some of them have kitchens in a separate building outside their house. Many of those with the separate kitchens outside the house have the same sort of setup. It's just in a different building. And if they have water, it usually goes to a separate building as well. Many of them don't have running water, but some do. And many of them have electricity. Some run with solar power. And interestingly enough, I couldn't get away from the idiocy of American TV even over there, because those who have the money to have a better house have access to the American TV, to the British TV, and Kenyan TV. This was the way in which my client told me, a very smart 19-year-old at the time, that my client, his family, and those who I was training in hypnosis could understand me. Because I had listened to hours, many hours, of Americans on TV, so my accent was something that they could understand pretty easily. I tell you all this because it's important to realize that even though we have something called social networking, social media, go on Facebook and tap into your friends there, go ahead and tell me how many of those people actually know what's going on in your life day to day, other than your postings on there. How many of them would be there to take care of you should you have a horrible time getting through some life's issue, be it an illness of a close one near you, or a financial problem? How many? My guess is very, very few, if any. I know even those people who contacted me on Facebook that I knew as far back as high school, and even one from elementary school, third grade to be exact. I wrote them back, and I got nothing back in return except for one exception to that rule. He had met a hypnotist and got me a contact because he thought it was interesting and that we should be able to speak to one another. And then I never heard from him again. So you see, who are the people who you really care about? Or who really truly care about you? Because you see, there was something that I really learned only back in 2009. And I had this dream of going over to Israel. I wanted to use my hypnotic skills to help my distant family, who I didn't really know, but who I knew were traumatized by all the fighting in the Gaza Strip. Those who were in the north of Israel, dealing with bombs being thrown over the walls and worse. Some of them leaving the area, some of them staying there. Everyone has to serve in the military, and there are several in the family who let us know that what we see on TV and read in our media has little to nothing to do with the reality of the practicalities of what's actually going on over there. These folks are living it. So I'd imagine they would know a lot better than the newscasters putting forth the propaganda that we hear and read in our media here. I knew of one person who could get me over there to work with a family, the same person who found these family members doing over a decade of research, genealogically speaking, found people in the family all over the world, many of them in Israel. He knew what I didn't, that it was totally illegal for me as a lay hypnotist to do any kind of hypnotism over in Israel. I probably could have done some neurolinguistic programming, which is a hypnotic technique in and of itself by its very definition, and bypassing the critical factor of the conscious mind. However, this gentleman, older cousin of mine, had a different idea in mind for my trip. He knew that I had just been diagnosed with a brain tumor because I had just told him that at that time. That I had 6 weeks of treatment that I needed to go through 5 days a week at Mass General Hospital. He also knew that they weren't going to be able to get rid of the tumor, that all they could really do was stop it from growing. I felt really bad because I was only 48, not even 49 yet, when I got this diagnosis. He was at that time 79 years old. And he knew that he could give me this gift to get away from reality, the day-to-day life. And that's exactly what I needed to heal. He knew deeper and more. Well, he had a lot more wisdom, having lived longer than I. So he felt moved to give me this trip to Israel. Because this was a teachable moment, as he explained it, that I wouldn't have had 3 years previous, given everything I was dealing with at the time. And he wanted me to be able to stay there for a really long time so I could really truly heal, get away from what he knew was the craziness of my life. And you know, all he really wanted in return, but I didn't have to feel I had to do it. But he would really, really, really appreciate it if I would just write him, email him from time to time to let him know how I was doing. Because as he said, I care and I'm interested in how you're doing. It was at that moment that I realized what true love really actually means. You see, many times we get love really mixed up with a whole lot of other things, like people buying us things, or taking us places, or maybe perhaps people are telling us things that they think that they need to tell us that has nothing to do with what actually is important to us. Or maybe they're trying to give us advice that has nothing to do with what we're interested in. Or maybe they're being really nice, giving us those things that they think we need or want. However, they never really truly listened to what was important to us, so they would never know. Worse, there are those people who believe that making sarcastic comments they feel are funny, with us as the targets, as a way of being affectionate. It's not a way of being affectionate. It's a way of being angry and hostile in a manner that is easier for others to take. But if you're the target of this kind of behavior, you know it because it feels awful. Or how about just being taken for granted when you're doing loving gestures? Never being told that those gestures were appreciated. The time that you spent or the thought put into it was meaningful to the person with whom you did these things for. Or how about those people who isolate themselves and back away from the relationship because of whatever's going on in their mind, and they never fully tell you what's going on, if they tell you anything at all. These are not ways of demonstrating love. Far from it. What happened to the innocent kiss on the cheek, or the touch on the shoulder, or the bear hugs of someone who truly, really cares about you and is showing it with taking the time to give you a real hug that lasts more than a second and a half, who really is able to lean into it even better heart to heart, to its top, at a seminar I just went to? Or how about turning off your cell phone, or better yet, leave it in the car far away from where you are with the people with whom you say you're spending your time with, to really listen and be present, to be where you're at while you're there with them. So you can have these wonderful interactions that are deeply emotional and meaningful, because you're both being present with one another in that moment, sharing those things that are important to you. Or maybe they're just fun things that you're doing with one another. Or how about getting together with a few close friends who share common interest? These are the things that we're missing these days. Because, let me tell you, dear listeners, we're like ants and bees. We're social, and we need the touch and the help and the support and the guidance of those others in our lives. More importantly, we need to be there for the younger people in our lives to help them, not because we have all the answers. Maybe we don't have all the answers, but we're there to listen and share from our experiences, even those things that we've done totally wrong that would be embarrassing to share. And yet those are the most important learnings we can give to those who we really truly love, who are younger than us, who are out there trying to make it on their own. You know, when I lost my father, I was 23 years old. And he was just starting to teach me how to make my way in life as a young adult, just graduating from college. I learned a lot from working in his office with him. You can get those learnings in the book I wrote called Learnings from My Journey, Suzanneisms for the Mind and Soul, which you can find on the website for my business at dawningvisions.com, or you can go to amazon.com and look under my name, Suzanne Kellner Zink, and find it there, or just look up Learnings from My Journey. It's pretty inexpensive, and you'll find a lot of bright, interesting ways to perceive things in a different manner, as my father had started to teach me from the age of 16 to not quite 21 when I worked with him in his dental office. One of the most important things I learned from that man was how to act with integrity and purpose, from a feeling of passion, caring, being interested in his patients, feeling good about themselves, because dentistry matters, not just from a physical health level, but also on, shall we say, the cosmetic level. More than you'd know if you haven't worked in a dental office. That being said, I never realized, I really never thought, that anyone could come into my life just kind of take over the shoes that my dad left with his death. And yet I have to say that one day I was thinking about this, as sometimes we think about things, and Bill Fern, the gentleman who took it upon himself to make this loving gesture to get me the hell out of the situations I was in so I could take time for myself, so I could heal and listen to myself and what I needed to move forward in my life as far away as he could find for me to get, knowing that I had relatives there who would take me under their wing, which indeed did happen. So very blessed for the help that I received from one in particular. And he did this without any judgment of my being short of funds in a horrible economy. He did this without any judgment of what I might have done different to bring this illness upon me. He did this without any judgment of any past actions I might have had that might have created some angst or hurt to other family members along my journey. No, he wasn't interested in any of that stuff. Partly because he didn't really know me that well when he made this gesture, and part of it because he's a gentle, loving, caring, mature man of great wisdom and grace. He's the type of person that we need to be making more of. And yet, what are we doing in our society now? We're creating people who have no idea how to relate to themselves, never mind another. I can't tell you what it means to know that there's a person in my life who cares so deeply and completely when he seriously had several hundred other relatives that he had met and gotten to know, many of them much better than me at the time that I was making the contact and telling what was going on with me and wanting this trip to Israel. I never asked him for the trip to Israel, by the way. I only asked him for the connections to the family members so I could go. He understood what I needed and wanted from him without my ever coming out and asking for anything directly, ever. That's the kind of man he is. And because of that, one of my clients is a sort of partner in my business. She's always coming up with new ideas, or podcast ideas and web blogs I can write and things I need to learn and study and places I need to go to get out the word about what I'm doing. She healed herself to a great degree, learning love and compassion for herself along the way, finding a life that was worthy of her being here, something she was missing when she first found me, to help her deal with the drug addiction. That was back in 2008. In fact, this trip took me away from her, to create this relationship and find sort of a spiritual connection between the two of us, something that she actually observed in our last session together before I took off. She's the one who told me to do a weblog, a podcast, on what it truly means to create love instead of death and pillage. She's the one who suggested I write a letter, send an email or a card to the one and only Bill Fern, my loving cousin, who did this for me out of the grace of his own heart. And I did that. It was kind of weird, because the only thing he really wants me to think of him as is a special friend. But he's so much more than a special friend. I have a lot of special friends. I even have people in my life who have adopted me as their sister, a few of those. I have my Gunson, who I'm really close to. I had another young college student. She was actually in high school, and she adopted me and my ex while we were still married as her own godparents for the guidance that we gave her. And many others. But Bill Fern, there's something more about him. You see, because he also went out of his way to tell me the things I needed to hear that he knew I wouldn't want to hear. That only someone who truly loves another would be willing to do. He told me that I needed to get away from some of the family problems that were creating such a problem in my life at that time upon my return from the Israel trip. And again, I can't tell you, I probably wouldn't have been able to do the things I needed to do shortly after I returned had I not had that trip to find my grounding, my centeredness. I don't even want to know what could have happened had I not taken the action necessary to help my mom at a time when she really was not in a position to do so for herself at all. And yet it created a lot of problems for myself, a lot of deep emotional pain and angst, doing what was necessary. And his response to me was, Suzanne, you've done what you can do, and you need to take care of yourself for your own health and well-being. You need to do this for yourself. No one else can do it for you. And he said it in a very assertive way, very similar to the way my father would have spoken to me about something similar. He had a concern with great emotion and assertiveness, but with a tender, loving kind of look to it. And it was really that moment when I realized that this man had been able to take over the shoes that my father had left so many years before. You see, there's few people who will take the time, who will put themselves in a relationship with you on the line to tell you what you have to hear. Not because they have some kind of ego involved, but because it is in your own best interest. Knowing that you might be upset with them. There's very, very few people who will do that for you. And if you find someone who will do that for you, you hold on to them, because that's someone who really, truly loves you. Because it's always easy to be there for those people who are there when we're having good times. It's a hell of a lot harder to be there for those people who we love when they're going through a hard, hard time or need to hear things that they don't want to hear but need to hear in order to help themselves. These are your true friends and true supporters in life. And so he was showing himself to be a very special person in this very special way. And that was really the way that I wrote the letter, feeding all those special words and phrases that he had given me over the time that he had told me he would send me to Israel up to now. Because as a hypnotist, I know that the best way to get someone to hear what you're saying is to feed their very exact phraseology back to them. And though it felt weird, it was done with passion and emotion, so he knows that it was never about the money he spent. It was about the opportunity to go deep inside myself, to figure out what I needed, to move on with my life, to make a decision whether or not to move to Israel permanently and do an LAA as a Jewish person. I had all the documentation I needed to do that and stay there if I wanted to. I didn't have an apartment here to come back to, and I didn't have a car or anything. I just left. And I just left it up to my creator to decide what was right for me. And my creator decided to bring me right back to the apartment that I left by the same person who told me to write this letter to, my beloved Bill Fern. And you know, he hasn't responded yet. I know he gets a lot of emails from people all over the place. He probably doesn't really know what to say in response. And really, there's no response that's necessary. But I also know that he always does respond. And he apologizes for taking a long time to respond. But to do right by him, he already responded to two other emails that I had sent him because I want to go visit him. And I'm going to see him in July, July 22nd. It'll be the first time in a year, I think. Actually, 2 years since I've seen him last. He's 83 years old now. Well, we'll be in July 10th. And that's another thing that I learned when I was working with my elders. One never really knows when another person is going to have their time run out. Even more so, that special cousin he put me in contact with over in Israel, who took me under her wing and made sure that I was able to complete all of the things that Bill felt were very important to me, and meeting my family, and getting to the Wailing Wall, seeing all of Israel, she made sure all those things happened, as well as having a decent place to live, bringing me to her home for lunches and dinners and meeting all her extended family. I found out the night that I was to leave for my first trip to Nairobi, Africa, to work with my very special client and, as I said, my excellent friends over there for 2.5 weeks of family therapy, as well as much time learning about their country and their people in every which way that my client's father could figure out he could do so in the time given and still get the work done that I was there to do with his son and with himself and his wife. And you know, the email came from Bill Firm, and it just said that Leah had passed away from cancer, I don't know what kind, in the arms of her kids, her husband, everyone was there by her side at the time. I don't know exactly how old she was. I do know that she had retired a couple years earlier from teaching English to third graders over there in Israel, in what they call gyms, which is what we call schools. And she touched my heart in so many ways. I was so lucky to have met her. Because again, we never know when someone's time is running out. And even in my own situation, although the brain tumor was not deadly by any stretch, it certainly impeded my thinking. Well, it didn't really impede my thinking. It created some double vision, which did go away, actually. But I was worried it would impede my thinking, and I wouldn't be able to get out the information that I learned and how to heal addictions completely and totally using these techniques that I've learned in a program I developed just by doing it successfully over the past, I don't know, 8 years or so, with all kinds of addicts. That was my biggest concern. And I guess that's what earned my trip to Israel. And that's what's earned my place in people whose hearts I have a place. Because, you know, I make it my business to let them know that I care, I'm interested, I'm there when they need me. Regardless of what hardship may put me into, it doesn't matter. I just do it. I don't think twice about it. Because that's what true friendship and love and care and interest is all about. And I can only believe that because I was there for one niece in particular when I had no money to send, but I sent her money anyway. Ended up in a return, not a return check, but rather insufficient funds, because she held onto that check for too long. The money was very, very hard to come by. When I had sent that to her, the money was in the account when I sent it to her. It wasn't after. Such is life. I don't know. I gave her about $600 over that period of time to help her out while she was going through school, not getting any living money while she was there from her parents at the time. And I know that without my father giving me the money to live on to do. Enjoy my time in school, it wouldn't have been the same experience, and I wanted her to be able to have a good experience at school. She deserved that. She's a good, good kid. So because I did as the Kabbalists say, and I stretched myself and I shared until it hurt, I was granted this great gift of love, travel, and learning about my own heritage, my own faith, my own family. In this very beautiful and intense way. So I know I've been kind of rambling in this particular podcast, and it's gone a lot longer than my other ones. But there's a whole lot of lessons for you to gain from this. Most especially, to understand that it is when we love ourselves enough to care and be interested in living our lives in a way that works for us, even if it's not perfect. To honor those people who demonstrate love and care toward us because they're interested and are present with us in ways that few people have the time or intelligence or ability, maybe, to be there because of all the garbage that's going on in their own life. We take the time to really understand how important it is to care and be interested in those people who we say we love, regardless of what it may cost, regardless of the time it takes, regardless of any of that stuff. It doesn't matter. Be present. Be there. Because that is how we demonstrate we love someone. Do it for the people in your family first. Then look at the elders who have lost so many of the people in their lives, who have passed over. They feel lonely. Many of them have kids who can't deal with their own mortality and being present for their elders. This is what I learned working in elder care. You have Vietnam vets coming back many years ago who still are out there drinking and drugging themselves to death. We have all the kids coming back from Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, and wherever the hell else we found to send them. These deplorable situations, of which was a no-win situation for our country because of politics and economies and all this other garbage that has nothing to do with health and healing and caring for our own. It's disgusting, frankly. Be there for them in the ways that you can. Give them the things they need, above and beyond the material things. Give them your time, your heart, your soul. Show you love and care about them. Mentor younger people. They need us so badly now, they don't even understand how to communicate any longer. Text messaging, using abbreviations that I don't even understand most of them myself at this point in time, being 52 years old, soon to be 53. They use improper spelling and improper grammar to make it really quick and to the point. Many of them don't know who they are, or even how to figure out who that is, because they're too busy pretending to have a happy life, when in fact many of them are dying inside, which is why suicide is the third largest killer of our teenagers and early 20-somethings. Did you know that prescription drugs, pain pills in particular, are the number one substance abused by teens and young 20-somethings? Did you realize this leads to heroin addiction? And there's this other horrible stuff out there that is created with toxic materials that actually eats the person alive from the inside out. But it's cheaper than heroin, even on the streets. They take it. And it's 10 times more addictive, so they can't stop. And the doctors don't know what they're looking at when they see these people with these horrible ulcers in their body and they can see down in the bone. It's horrific. It's terrible. And it's here in America. Think about what it means to be there for the people you love and the people who have demonstrated that they love you and, more importantly, the people who need you, like the kids that you had the gall to bring into this world who you neglect because you're too busy taking care of whatever you think is more important than them. How dare you do that? You spend your time with your children. They deserve your love, your consideration. You're being present to tell them those hard things that they need to hear that they don't want to hear, even if they get mad and tell you that they don't love you. Know that you've given them what you need to give them, and that one day they'll be able to understand the deeper messaging and what true love actually means, and hopefully demonstrate that for their own kids and the people younger than they when they get older. These are the things that matter in life. These are the things that need to happen. And maybe in so doing, maybe we'll be able to help heal first our families, then our communities, and maybe the world. If you don't want to give of your time and attention in terms of being present in that way, not being a highly emotional person, you'd rather make things, go ahead and make things. Habitat for Humanity, go help create a house for someone who can't afford it. Go create gardens for people, help them feed themselves. There's so many ways that we can help one another out. All lessons the indigenous people know from their very existence, and things that we've lost due to the technology that's invaded our soul, which we need to learn how to turn off. please let me know how this has worked out for you, being present for those people who care about you and love you, and those whom you love. And even more so, being able to fill in the gaps in someone else's life, someone you don't even know, but will get to know in a very special way. Because my guess is that you will be moved in ways that you never knew you could be, feeling more fulfilled and happier inside for taking the time to do these things. I know it's true. And I'd love to hear from you. The quicker you do it, the quicker you'll realize what you've been missing by losing touch with your own reality, right here in the world in which we live, far, far away from technology. At this time, I would love to introduce you to a fantastic woman whose purpose is to inspire and empower others to be of service to humanity in a loving and caring manner while achieving their aspirations with integrity. Her name is Alicia Lawrence, and she has a podcast called I Live to Inspire. She also has a web blog where you can read the content. She says that everyone has their own definition of success and freedom, and she is moved to inspire you to get there by sharing her journey with you, called The Alicia Lawrence Show, I Live to Inspire, which you can easily find on Stitcher.com and iTunes. You love her warm, comforting Jamaican voice. If you'd prefer to read the content, go to her website at http://ilivetoinspire.com/podcast/. You will truly enjoy and learn much from what she shares with you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne teaches you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your keys to happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.